Before we get rolling with the podcast today, just want to let you know about Cyber Monday coming up for TechSmith. It's the biggest sale of the year on November 29th and November 30th, 2021. Make sure you check out all the great prices because they only happen like this once a year. So don't miss it, Cyber Monday this year on the TechSmith website, available only online. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome to the Visual Lounge. We are so glad that you're here. Whether you're watching this live or you're listening to or watching it after the fact, we're just glad that you've tuned in because we always have great shows. And today, our guest, I mean, he is fantastic. He's got super deep knowledge about audio production. He's got a great experience that has won him awards. And he's known to be able to make things easy for us because of the work that he does at TechSmith and things like that. So we're so grateful Justin David Proctor is here. We're going to be talking to him in just a second. Before we get to that, though, a couple things. We've been talking about that Level Up event. You know, just so you know, there's still some seats, but you got to go to the early session. But we'd love to have you join in. Go to TechSmith.com/levelup. And throughout the show, if you're learning something, you think, man, that was really valuable information. We'd love to see you share it on social media. Tell your friends about the show. Tell them, go listen in and hear the great things that we're sharing. And I know that's a promise of faith here that, like, we're going to say something good today. But I can promise you, Justin has got amazing things to teach us, and we'll have a great conversation. So with that said, let's jump into today's show. Justin David Proctor has worked in professional audio and music recording since 2005, engineering in multi-room, large-format commercial studios and cutting albums for major label record companies. Justin began managing a private record recording studio with his Koch Records production partner a few years into this work. While running Delivery Room Studios, Justin... Actually, I have a great joke there, but we'll talk about it later. Anyways, when he was running his studios, Justin won two Grammy Awards, one in, I believe it was 2007, and one in 2009 for recording engineering, and began composing original music, which can be heard on television networks and streaming services in the U.S. and overseas. Justin holds a couple different degrees from Full Sail University around recording engineering and entertainment business, and he has spent a lot of time in that world learning and helping people to be able to use those skills that they've gained. And just the fact that he's worked in production and engineering is amazing. And I am so grateful. Not only is he here with me today to talk with us, but he is here on the Visual Lounge. So with that, welcome Justin David Proctor to the Visual Lounge.
Hello.
Hello. Justin, thank you so much for being here. I know this might be a little out of your comfort zone, but we're glad to have your experience and your expertise.
I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, we're going to start kind of with the big thing because we alluded to it. So I don't know that I've ever talked to someone who's won a Grammy at all. I've seen the show. I've been to the Grammy Museum, which is in Los Angeles, and it was pretty fantastic seeing the history of music and things like that. So I want to clear the table because we've got much more, I think, important things to talk about. But tell us, what did you win your Grammys for?
So that was recording engineering, and we were a music studio. So you can think of a big band in a room, and you set up a whole bunch of microphones. You run those mics into a console and into a digital audio workstation, and you record those tracks, some of them live and then some of them overdubbed. And then you pass that material onto a mixer, a mastering engineer after. Those just kind of got released after the sessions were over. You finish up a job like that, and it just sort of is in your rearview mirror. You don't really think about it. And then the next thing I know, I pay attention to those award shows and those artists were on it.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And I did notice you've got your certificates in the background there, which is you can see it just above your forehead. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I want to ask about that, because here's what I can make this logical jump that somebody is going to be like, well, I'm not going to be that kind of I'm not going to do anything like that. If they're watching the Visual Lounge, they're probably not an audio engineer. They're not producing award-winning music programs and audio tracks and things like that. So in your professional opinion, do you have to be at that level to get good audio?
Definitely not. And since leaving that environment, there's not a whole lot I've really changed about my workflow. And it's all very practical once you get down to it. And especially now, the technology is a lot more accessible for a lot more people. And it does a lot of the more, let's say, maybe complicated or challenging things for us. It's pretty remarkable how sophisticated this technology has gotten so that our experience as recorders is not complicated at all because it's been handed over to that technology. So, yeah, you don't at all have to have my background or be that much of a professional, as it were, to get good audio.
Yeah. And so I love that. I love that it's gotten easier for kind of the everyday person like myself. And you know, I think of, you know, someone that's just coming into this and they don't know anything about audio engineering at all. And it's, I think you can be fairly successful. So as you went through this process and, you know, as a professional engineer, you worked on your a degree in that, and you've obviously done lots of different types of audio recordings. I think when we talked one time, you mentioned not only did you do music, but you did spoken word, narration stuff. In that, is there any big lessons that you've learned, kind of high level, that you'd like, that would apply to kind of the everyday person?
For sure. I would say what matters is the production itself. Always spend a little time in pre-production as well. You know, you and I did a little test run of our technology a day or two before we came here. And so we're not getting any surprises, really. So any pre-production you can do before the day of the session, let's call it, before the day you hit record, any kind of planning you're doing ahead of time, including testing technology, is going to go a long way. Because the goal is, the production itself is all that really matters. The most you can do right when that, and I'll use some recording slang here, when the tape is rolling, that's when you want to get everything as perfect as you can, which means that when you get into post-production, you're not really having to mess with much because you got it right from the get-go. And so that's really my strategy. And also, this is a little bit of a PSA for everybody here, but data backup, y'all. Like, as soon as you get that little feeling, like, in your gut, where you think to yourself, gee, I would really hate to lose this, make yourself a copy of whatever you're doing, a full copy of your project. Put that on an external drive. Put that in the cloud. Because data loss really it's not a thing anymore, at least not if you're paying attention. There's no reason to lose data. It happened to me once in those recording studios, under very high pressure, a lot of money and a lot of egos going around. And it was like the worst experience of my life. And it can be easily avoided. So back up your stuff.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're speaking not only from that experience, but maybe what you see some of our customers deal with on a regular basis.
No doubt. And it hurts my heart, I'll tell you, Matt, and because it's so easily avoidable. So that's true.
Yeah, for sure. So I love it. And you know, I think if you've ever experienced data loss, especially when it comes to something like a production, whether it's video or audio or something like that, it is very painful because you can't go back and recreate that. So Let's dive into a little bit more of your experience, Justin, because I think there's some things that you can teach us that will be really valuable today. And where I want to start is one of the questions we often get asked at TechSmith is, and I know, like, as I'm out speaking and doing things, is the question I get asked is, well, what microphone should I get, right? Like, it's the general, like, oh, this is going to solve all my audio problems. And we'll talk about the other things that we can do. But for generally speaking, without maybe recommending a specific one, because I know there's lots of different options, can you tell us about the different types of microphones and what might be applicable to people who are making screencasts or making video?
Yeah, and this is part of that technology becoming more accessible. These days, you basically won't buy a bad microphone. Like if you pick from a handful of companies that have been doing it for a while, you're not gonna get a lousy product. So that leaves the question, what do I need out of the microphone that I'm using? We basically have two choices. You've got your condenser microphone and you've got your dynamic microphone. This right here is a dynamic microphone. The condenser microphones are the ones that tend to be larger. They have a large capsule in them, so the physical frame of those mics is bigger. They require what's called phantom power, and that's why they're so sensitive. They get a little boost of electricity, and that enables the diaphragm to pick up more sound in the room. So they're more sensitive. That doesn't mean, however, that the dynamic mic is necessarily worse or less sensitive. It just means that the dynamic mic needs a little more power, a little more volume cranked up to pick up what you're recording. My preference is with dynamic, but the things you would consider, and I'll tell you why. Well, really, dynamic mics, it's a lot easier to hide your room with a dynamic mic. So if you are in a room that's not treated very well and you're hearing too much of your voice like bounce off the walls, a dynamic mic is an excellent choice for that because it's not as sensitive as that condenser microphone. Another major consideration for what type of mic to choose, dynamic microphones have, all microphones have polar patterns, which is basically the direction in which it's sensitive to sound. Dynamic mics only have one polar pattern in almost all cases. Condenser microphones often have switches where you can pick, like, do I want the sound that's coming right out of my mouth? Or am I interviewing somebody and they're on the opposite side of me, like I'm looking in there at their face, and I want to pick them up too. In that case, you would have a cardioid microphone with like a figure eight pattern because it'll pick up both people on both ends. So sensitivity and polar pattern are most important. And of course, dynamic mics are super durable. I mean, I could put nails into wood with this thing and be totally fine. condenser microphones are a bit more fragile.
Yeah, and I think if I remember right, examples of a condenser microphone would be like the Yetis, which are very popular, and they have a great sound. But I like what you said, that you're going to pick up more kind of, I don't remember the word you used, but you're going to pick up more of the room noise, right? The room tone, if it's, you've got an echoey note room or a more hollow room, or even just, I'm guessing just even the things around you, it's going to be
absolutely
picking up.
Yeah, vibration. You know, from your desk or your mic stand or whatever, the condenser microphones will grab all of that. That is the most popular type of mic that's out right now, though. Don't get me wrong. Like those USB mics that plug directly into your computer, a lot of those are condenser microphones. So they're in heavy use. But I see now that dynamic microphones, direct plug-in USB, are becoming more popular. If not, you would need like a little small recording interface to get that sound into your computer.
So one of the questions I have, let's say I'm in the market for a new microphone and I'm trying to choose which one. Obviously, you've laid out some stuff. Is distance a concern with a dynamic microphone? Like, I feel like, do you have to be closer to it for that kind of that level, the power of your voice?
Yeah, generally speaking, the source of your sound has to be louder, or you have to crank up the input gain on your microphone to pick up more of that sound. But dynamics are really popular in broadcast and radio. One thing they're really good at is having a nice proximity effect. And that is, like, if I were to back away, the tone of my voice, the timbre of my voice changes a bit. If I get really close, it sounds different. So you can play with this distance with dynamic microphones, and they tend to sound really good for voiceovers.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So we've got some of that kind of that choice there. And there's other types of mics out there, folks. Just if you're wondering, like, I know everyone asks me, I use a shotgun mic. I don't know if technically if it's a condenser dynamic. I don't know if there's a difference. it probably depends on the microphone.
Yeah, it's probably a condenser.
But it's giving me some
great choice, though. Yeah, and they're made for exactly what you're doing. Like you'll usually find those on movie sets or TV shows where you can't have your mic in the shot like I'm doing rather gratuitously right now. You need to keep that off camera. And so that's why they'll use those shotguns.
Yeah. So we had one of the comments that have come in, and I think it's really relevant to our conversation right now. So we got the microphone is obviously really important. Actually, we'll get to that in a second, because I actually want to ask another question about microphones. So you said it's hard to buy a bad microphone right now. Is there a price range that you recommend? Like if you're buying a $20 mic, is it going to be really that good versus do I have to spend $500 to get something? And then we don't need to name mics, but any brands that you recommend or trust?
That's a good question. Generally speaking, condenser microphones are a bit more expensive. But again, those are getting cheaper. Blue's done quite a job with that, like affordable condenser mics just flying out the door. Dynamics are a little bit cheaper. Frankly, I would not go sub $100. This thing cost me like $90, I think. And it's maybe 12 years old. So a little bit of investment up front, if you land at like the $100 mark, that thing's going to last a very, very long time. So it's good to throw a little more cash at it rather than pick something up that you're not going to like as much or that might become defective. And then you just got to replace it, however, a couple of years later.
Yeah, I think that's mics are well worth the investment, right? Like, because ideally, especially on the more analog mics, they as long as you're taking care of it, it's still going to be a good mic, right? Like, it's not like if you got a bunch of digital interfaces that can go. It's like, I always say it's just like buying a car. You know, if all the things that can break on a car, you think about like, oh, are my windows still going to work? Can I put those down if the electronics go out or whatever?
That's a great analogy. I used to hate powered windows because I was like, that's just going to break, you know, and now you can't buy a car without like the crank or whatever. But that's exactly the point. And what you're talking about here is a fundamental. If you pay attention to a couple of those core components in the gear you're using and in your workflow, keep things basic, far fewer things go wrong. There's far fewer things to troubleshoot. And in the end, you're going to get a much cleaner and more professional sounding result out of it.
Yeah. So any brands that you would recommend people look at as they're exploring different microphones?
Yeah. Because they're so popular, I think Blue is super solid. When I started in music, they were a brand new company and made these enormous expensive condenser mics, which I'm sure they still make. But their like prosumer line is solid. They know what they're doing. I love Shure. This is a Shure microphone. You, I think, are using the Audio Technica, and I would buy those in a second. Audio Technica is super cool. Sony makes good mics as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that there's good options out there, and if anyone's shopping, lots of price points. That's one of the thing I think I've noticed is that you can.
Yeah.
To a degree, you get what you pay for. You know, you buy a cheap mic, you get bad audio.
Those are definitely a thing. Yeah.
I remember the very first, you're going to laugh at this, Justin. My very first microphone I went out and bought was for an interview at TechSmith so I could make a video. And it was one of those desk ones that's like the long, skinny neck. You know, it was like $13 and I'm like super poor. I'm like, okay, well, let's buy a microphone.
Did it have a bendy arm on it?
I don't think it had a bendy arm, but it had a little ball joint that I could move it around. Like, it was awful.
Sat on the
desk. You know, that's another thing you mentioned, just getting, you know, the vibrations. And so if someone's in their environment and they're thinking about microphones and they're going to invest here, how do you know, like, I look at microphones online a lot because I'm like, ooh, look at a new microphone. How do I know that one's going to be right for me, though? Are there things I should be looking for or things I should be considering that would, you know, help me decide? Because I feel like we've got so many good options. It just makes it hard to choose. And if they're all kind of same price point, any advice?
I like to keep it simple. I'm not like a bells and whistles kind of guy. What's its reputation say in the market? Is it from a company that's been doing this for a while, so they've really got their designs down? But like I mentioned earlier, what kind of polar pattern do I need for how I'm doing my recordings? Do I have an interface? If I don't, then I'm going to need one of those direct plug-in USB microphones. If I do have an interface, that's going to open me up to some of the standard like XLR type connection microphones. Another thing I think is longevity, durability. Am I moving around at all? Maybe a bit less relevant now since we've been spending so much time in our homes. We're not traveling so much, but I'm used to doing stuff on location. So am I dragging my gear around? And if I am, I should look at something that can take a little bit of a beating, you know, and so I'm not going to have to worry about it too much. And then also, like I was saying, the condenser versus dynamic thing, just how sensitive do I need this to be? And they have distinctly different sounds. So you might even like the sound of your own voice on one of them and dislike it on another. So that's a thing too. go with personal preference. Trust your ears and be like, I prefer the way my voice sounds on this one versus that one.
Yeah, I think there's no substitute for if you can try a couple out and find out what works best for you and your tone. Okay, so you mentioned that we're at home a lot more. A lot of us are working at our home. We have to record our audio out of our home. So let's talk about the environment. So just a comment to help set the stage here. One of our listeners, Jane, she said, I think it was Jane, said, any tips on optimizing your environment against sounds you can't control? Dogs barking, kids, planes, buses. For those of us who don't have the luxury of dedicated sound booths, because obviously a microphone is a part of that equation, but like good sound sounds like it happens out here as much as it happens. I'm pointing to my microphone. You can't really see it, but it happens as much as in the microphone, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I don't have a dedicated sound booth either. I do most of my stuff. Like I live in a 100-year-old house and I have this attic space available and I've made it, and you can even see some of it behind me. It's not like I'm got the place full of treatment. I kind of have a punk rock attitude about this. I don't think I really need it. Also I rent, so I don't want to make permanent like modifications to my environment. So I'm all about super practical, easy stuff. So simple ideas. Get yourself a solid boom stand. This is another thing that you'll throw a few more bucks at it up front, but it'll last forever. And nothing is worse than a cheap like boom stand doing this thing on you, like in the middle of your take, you know? So get yourself a good boom stand or like, like one of these kind of desktop, things right here. When you're using one of those desktop ones, I mentioned bumping, it would pick up little vibrations and stuff. Put a piece of foam underneath it. Or put like roll up a towel or something. Just put it on top of something that will absorb some of that vibration if you happen to bump your knee into it or something like that. Another thing to consider is sometimes you can see like these wraparound cages for mics. When you're talking in a room, your voice is bouncing all over the place, and you're going to get some of that reflection coming up the back end of the microphone. The way polar patterns are designed, they block out stuff over here. Like this is a cardioid polar pattern. So it's going to pick up what's coming out of my mouth. It blocks out the side, but there's a little node like down here that is open. And so sound's going to come back that way. So if you place something here, you can avoid those reflections coming back into your recording. I think over-treating rooms can be a problem too. If you have a full decked out sound booth, like a vocal booth, interestingly enough, that presents its own set of recording and mixing problems. Like it might not sit in your project the way you need it to. It's a different thing. So I'm a big fan of treating a dedicated section of your space, but a little air is good. And I think you alluded to that. Like the sound is moving air. Like let it move and pick up a little bit, but not too much. And so another practical thing I like to do is I buy packing blankets from Harbor Freight. You know, they go on sale all the time and I spend $8 a pop and I hang those things everywhere. I throw them over stuff and I make little like kind of booths out of that. You know, you could just hang it over a railing or you could pin it to the wall. You could build a gobo, which is basically like a frame on wheels and slide that thing around. So those are some real easy kind of tips for treating your room.
Well, I love the packing blanket suggestion because that's cheap and affordable. And, you know, way back when, just early days of TechSmith, we had nothing. We didn't have a studio. We didn't have it. So a couple people on the training team, we took 2x4s. We built a box out of 2x4s. So, and then we took like bed foam, like egg crate foam, and just kind of wrapped the box in egg crate foam and threw a piece on top. It was like a death trap, honestly, because if anything happened, you were stuck in there, it would have melted on you. But it worked so well for just containing the sound. But I'm glad that you brought up that over-treatment can be a problem too, because it doesn't sound quite right. You want to, because I think good narration sounds natural, right? It doesn't sound too dead, but it's also not too open, too full. And so really, really great practical advice. And, you know, so the comment about outside noises, it just seems like it's it's common, right? Especially working from home. I can tell it's a Wednesday because everybody I'm on calls with on meetings has some kind of mower going outside or a leaf blower or, you know, whatever noise there is. So yeah. You've talked about kind of containing space. Is there any good, like, do the sound blankets or the moving blankets, does that help with exterior noise too? Or how do we take advantage to get rid of that?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to have those up. It will dampen your sound a little bit if you cover a window, for example. But I'm sorry to say that much of that, like I live on a corner where people just love to gun their engines and go flying by. So I there's really nothing I can do about that, but maybe to move farther away from the window or pick a more productive time of the day where I know nobody's doing that stuff. Nobody's like showing off on their bike or whatever. So if there's a time of day and I can schedule it for a quieter moment in my neighborhood, I'll for sure do that. But it's true that there are sounds that you can't avoid, in which case you would, well, you just kind of have to stop, let it go, let it pass, and then pick up your recording. And at that point, you can get pretty snappy with editing to where if you have to stop and do that, it's not a huge headache. You're like, all right, I'm just going to trim that and we're going to move on.
Yeah. I can't tell them to stop mowing, right? That would be the ultimate solution. Like, hey, could you do this later? Or yeah, record later. I love that. Yeah. I love the awareness of like, oh, I know this time of day is really busy. That's something we talk a lot about in video production, particularly. And because of the audio, like be aware of the traffic patterns and things like that. So if you don't want, you know, typical rush hour traffic noises, maybe you record earlier or later or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so much actually, to worry about.
Yeah, I thought about one more thing, too, about setting up your environment. We have so many devices and computers around us. Keep that stuff away from your mic as best as you can because they introduce EMF. If you ever set your cell phone down on top of the speaker and it gives you like that buzzing kind of like Morse code sort of thing, the electronics in your room are going to generate noise. So I use like extension cables for my power and extension cables for my USB and like, you know, a Bluetooth keyboard. And I back away with my microphone so that I'm not like sitting on top of my computer. I create a little distance and it brings down my noise floor. So I'm not bringing any of that EMF noise into my recording.
Yeah, fantastic. So one more thing about microphones that I thought of, Justin, I want to ask you about is oftentimes I see people and it feels like they're using their microphone incorrectly. Do you have any tips about mic usage? And I'm not, you know, like, how far should I be away from it generally? Are there things I should know about just using a mic well? Because I'm guessing this is something that if I were to walk into your studio, you would, one, probably expect me to know it, or two, you would be like, nope, can't get the good sound unless we do X, Y, and Z. So what would you tell us about actually tips for using our microphones?
Yeah, a real popular one is like for distance. How far away should I be sitting from that microphone? And a real popular one is to like do that kind of distance. But you can break that rule. If you like a little more proximity effect and you want to lean in and get that real like intimate in your brain kind of sound, you can do that. The trick would be, how do you then refer to that same distance when you're picking up the next day? And so if you're in the middle of a project or you ought to combine stuff, how do you know the approximate distance as you were yesterday? I like to tape. This is why I use boom stands. And one reason, I put tape on the floor. So I know exactly where my boom stand was sitting. If I happen to move it or need to, I just plop it down right where it was. Another practical device is like I have like a trunk full of stuff. I'm a big fan of Carrot Top, and I'm just going to pull props out during this whole thing.
I love it. Just make sure for the audio podcast, we tell people what we're seeing. So,
okay, yeah, I'm just picking up gear off of the floor. This is a pop filter, and it's got the bendy arm. So if I've always got this attached to my stand, it basically gives me that reference point every single time.
And pop filters being great for catching the plosives, right? The popping sounds.
Yeah. Plosives are so devilish. I struggle with them still, especially recording artists and singers who got a lot of air coming out of their head. You know, you'll notice here, I've got this pop filter. This is just like a magnetic clip that goes over the microphone. Underneath this, there's a metal grate. that comes built into the microphone. So that's one pop filter is the metal grate. The second pop filter is this foam thing that I've placed over the top with a little magnetic clip to keep it in place. And if I really felt like I was having a bad plosive day, I would put this third bendy arm pop filter on there to just squash all that air coming through. Another thing you can do about that is your mic positioning. If you're on axis, meaning it's pointing directly at like dead center of your mouth, that's on axis, and you're going to get the full blast of air coming right at you. If you point at an angle a little bit, less of that air is going to get moved into your diaphragm, and so you won't have so much of a plosive problem.
Yeah, I that's great advice, because I do know, and I don't have a prop microphone. I'm short of props today, but I know a lot of people also don't usually know where to talk to their microphone. They don't know where the pickup is. And I see this with like condenser mics, particularly like the Yeti, because you are doing exactly what most people want to do. You're talking to the top of the microphone. Mm-hmm. Where that's where the pickup is, I'm assuming, in that microphone. Where in like a Yeti, it's not at the top, it's at the side.
Right. And
people get it wrong. But I love the off axis. So again, if we can, I'll use my phone as to illustrate here. If this is where the microphone picks up, instead of talking directly into it, talking across it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great advice.
Exactly. Knowing how to address a microphone, especially with Dynamics, it's a bit easier because Dynamics just point right at you, because they're even almost shaped like an arrow pointing at you. Condenser microphones are a bit more ambiguous. They have kind of mysterious shapes. Not to mention, when you change the polar pattern, how you address that microphone is also going to change, because it's going to pick up from different areas of space. Generally speaking, companies will often put their logo where you're supposed to talk. So if you're looking at the logo, you know the mic is pointing in the correct direction. But read the manual on that one, because it's not too hard to figure out.
Yeah. Oh, not always followed advice, but good advice. Read the manual about how to use your your equipment before you start.
I read every page, and I'm not ashamed to say it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I want to ask one of our guests, our viewers, questions, and then we've got some. I want to talk about another thing related to helping us get good sound. But the question I thought was really good: what's the worst mistake you ever made producing audio? There's probably a million ways to mess up and make mistakes. I feel like I do it all the time. But for you, what do you think, if you had a worse mistake you made, what is it?
This is probably not exactly what they're fishing for, but it is the first thing that pops into my mind. And it's that session, that data I lost. It was awful. Luckily enough, I was in a position where I could work for 48 hours straight, and nobody knew. Like, I hit it, but that was just by chance. And it caused me so much stress. I will never go without making a copy of my project, you know, just a few minutes into it. Another mistake, which is probably in the direction of this question a little more, is sample your stuff. Like, if you're wondering how to address a microphone and you don't really know how to talk into it, make a couple of test recordings and listen to them, and then choose one. Don't just like up and run. Give yourself 10 minutes, 15 minutes to experiment and play around a little bit, and do some tracking before you commit your final project to tape, and you'll be far more aware of what you're going to get when you're done.
Yeah, great advice. Again, often probably not followed like it should be, but I know
not really.
I've made those mistakes, and I've gotten back with my recording and it was wrong, or something wasn't chosen right, or even on this show, we've started off and I didn't realize my microphone got switched, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, and why do we do that? We do that because we feel rushed, right? We got a deadline or something. Sure, but what if you have to redo that work?
Right.
You know, because you missed that step. That's a whole lot more time that you're now going to have to commit to it. So test things out before you really dive in.
Yeah. Well, Justin, I want to talk about, and we talked a little bit pre-show about this, but I think it's really important. There's a mystery around it for me, and it is, I often hear when people are talking about music and recording levels to like about decibels, like, oh, you're looking for so many decibels in your voice recording or whatever. And I've always, I kind of understand what decibels are there for, but like, help us as complete novices here to the world of audio engineering to understand like what are we looking at when we talk about decibels, and what should we know? And we don't have to get super technical, but I'm really curious because I think there's something here that will help us to kind of understand, especially as we make multiple projects, right? How do we make things sound consistent? How do we make sure that we're making something that can be heard well, not too loud, not too soft? So what, Oh, teach us, great one, about decibels.
this is an awesome subject, actually. And if you were to just kind of do a random Google search, you'd notice that there are a couple of different types of decibel readings out there, or scales. They're logarithmic scales. And the one that we are interested in with digital audio is called DBFS, dB full scale. And that's meant for digital audio. Decibels were around before computers. And so there's a whole different set of measuring for like the giant hardware electronic of devices that, you know, they invented in the early recording. The sound is measured differently when it's in the air. When it's out in space, it's measured differently. So we can't use the same scale for all of those environments. What we're interested in here is DBFS. And so basically that's like, how much of this thing do I have, or how little of it do I have? How loud or how soft? The reason this matters is because, number one, it's consistency. If I have to do my project over a couple of days, am I hitting the same level all the way through? If I have to deliver my product to somebody else, are they going to ask me for like a peak decibel rating? You know, like, are they going to say, don't go over -9? I need to know how to at least keep my eye on that along the way, so that I deliver that consistent product. And the platforms that we're used to uploading to, do have these standards in place. And at least I know like Spotify does. I think my target for Spotify is like, I want to say it's -19 maybe. I'd hand stuff over at -23 if I'm going to get mastered. You know, YouTube is a different story because YouTube, and this is really very common on the internet and internet videos, is that we like it loud. So you can go as high as -9 all the way up to 0 with stuff posted on YouTube, and that will be good.
So okay, I'm gonna play I don't know anything here, Carl, because you just said a bunch of stuff, and I want to make sure we're understanding. So, because it's always been interesting to me, like you said, oh, you targeted -23, you can go up to 0. Like, I get it's a logarithmic scale, but I wish it was easy, and it's like 0 is good, and everything, you know.
So how
do you know what's good? And obviously, I guess if you're going to go to like Spotify, they probably give you recommendations. I don't know that I've ever seen anything on YouTube about publishing recommendations for decibels. So how do you get the sense of like generally what's good? Is -9 a generally a good target? I really don't know. And I guess what would you tell people who are probably in the same boat as me, but going like, I have no idea what I should do?
That's a good question. If you know who you're delivering your content to, if you know where it's going, you can direct that query to the company, or you can kind of do a Google search. I don't think YouTube has stuff published either. I think it's just a big, like, everybody's kind of doing what they feel like they want to do. And I think that that's pretty close to 0 in YouTube's case, because people like it loud. One consideration is someone else going to take my stuff and do something to it? And that's why the Spotify target is a little bit lower, because Spotify does this thing where they will essentially master your song, or your podcast or whatever it is, so that it is level with the rest of their content coming before and after you. This was a thing in TV like 10 years ago. You'd be sitting there watching your show, and a commercial, like a toothbrush commercial, would come on, and it would just blow your head off your shoulders because it was so much louder. There are things in place now that are meant to normalize that experience. What do you choose? That's a nuanced question. I think no lower than -23 is it, but that's probably pretty low if you're not going to do any like post kind of mastering thing with your audio. And -9 is a real solid number for like, I think, posting on the internet.
Okay. I mean, that gives me a range, right? At least I can work within that. I can start to say what works well within my organization, within my needs. It's always been a kind of a mystery. So
yeah, and it's a mystery to me too, because it's not like there is not necessarily a hard and fast rule. And again, you can trust yourself too. If you upload this thing and you're like, man, I have to crank the volume on my computer all the way up, you know, start recording stuff a bit louder in your production to raise that overall volume. And as long as you're not hearing clips, as long as you're not hearing like nasty compression, trust your ear on that one and you're good.
Yeah. So Justin, I had you grab some graphics and let's look at one or two of these just to get a sense of like, when I'm doing the recording, what do I need to be looking at here to make sense of this? And so do you have a preference on which we look at? We got the video, we've got a couple of product meters. Which one should I bring up for you?
You can throw up the Audi8 one.
Okay, so I'm going to just hide this and right there. So this is Audi8 for anyone who's looking. I think you should be able to see that, Justin, I hope.
Yeah, so on the right-hand side there, we're looking at our meter. The bright green color is really the most recent sound that we've heard, because you'll see this thing bouncing. And the reason you get like above the bright green, you've got a dark green and then you've got like a brownish orangish color. That's meant to show a kind of history of your sound. The peak sound you're making at the moment is that boldest, most upfront color. That's like real time right now what's happening. At the rest of those kind of muted colors, as those things fade out, that gives you an idea of what's happening over time. It's like it's a bit of a longer snapshot, so you can get the feel for the general arc of your overall content. Whether or not you want to show it, Matt, is up to you, but that's what that video is about, to kind of give a different visualization of what frequency or volume looks like over time as it goes through.
All right. Yeah, super. And I'm guessing we can see our decibels. And so it looks like zero is kind of the top here. This one you see over time is about that -9. Is that right?
It's that's a little right. Hard to yeah. See, but... That's right. Yeah. And yeah, the reason it's zero, I mean, we're in a digital environment here. So you can think of zero. I know we're used to thinking of zero as being nothing, but zero is just like the max you can get. And don't get that close to it. Don't get that close to zero.
Right. I was just going to throw up. So here in Camtasia, you got the same. It's the same thing, right? It's the same scale and same kind of color appropriation. So one of the questions I have, Justin, is someone looks at like these meters, and oftentimes they're using color as kind of an indicator. Like green is, I'm assuming, safe. Yellow is typical yellow warning, and red is too hot, right? Like it's too much. Is that true for TechSmith products as well?
Good question. I know Audi8. Yeah, what they'll do is they'll give you different colors, and those colors can also will represent frequency ranges too. So it gives you a little bit of more information there. For practical purposes, in most software, because the meters aren't particular, they're not really complex. It's basic information. They're just going to give you the basics. Like, is it red? You're too hot. Back off. Is it yellow? You're pretty good. Like you're not too quiet. You're not too loud. Hang out in that area. And then you've got green below that.
All right. Well, anything else we should know about this? As someone's going, if they're going to go make a recording today, anything else you would want to tell us about decibels or things that we should kind of be aware of before recording?
I would say it just takes a little bit of practice. Don't sweat it too much. Keep an eye on what your meter is telling you. You'll get the little number at the bottom too of the meter that can tell you where, like, the number you're hitting with your peak volume. Just the loudest sound you make is what that meter is going to tell you at that moment. So it's weird and foreign at first, but as you watch it, it becomes such a second nature as you just kind of get used to seeing what it's telling you. And there's some really great tutorials online about how to read these things and how to watch them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this has been super helpful for me. I don't know about anybody listening or watching, but I now feel like you've opened the door to the decibels for me. So now I can understand how to be more consistent, and I'll have to I'll have to check the decibels on this show because I've got a mixer I'm running through, so maybe I need to make some adjustments. But before we get to our speedrun, Justin, which we're almost ready for, I want to bring up. So one of the things that we do, and I don't know if you were even aware of this, is we do a study every couple of years of video viewer preferences, right? What, you know, like how long do people like videos, like lengthwise? And we ask them a bunch of questions. One of them, we ask them about a variety of things. And I want to share with you real quick. We're going to bring this up. Hopefully this is right. Nope, that's the video one. Let me go to this one right here. Okay, so this is the slide to look at. What important style and content characteristics? And I'm sure it's no surprise to you. The number one thing that people said was the most important style or content thing is clear audio quality. Why, in your professional opinion, we'll give you a chance just to espouse your wisdom. Why is clear audio so important for video?
Well, in my mind, it's really where all the information is coming from. You can't jam all that information into a graphic on screen. So if you're for some reason unintelligible or the audio is like painful to listen to, that's going to be a problem. And audio can be like hard to hear. It can hurt your ears. And so that introduces like this discomfort thing that like, you know, not so great video doesn't really do to you. I think people tend to multitask too. So if you want to keep somebody hooked on your content, they need to follow by ear and look away from the screen and do something else over here, and still follow along with what you're saying to them. Also, I think that we pick up, we're engaged with one another's personality through our voices. And with music too, good quality music elicits a emotional response from you. So if you want to extract that emotional response from your listeners, it's got to be clean, clear, and like upfront audio.
Love it. Great. And so many great points that you just pulled out about, I think, why audio is so important. I actually had somebody ask me the other day if it's okay to make a video without audio. And, you know, the answer is, of course, you can do that. But there's a lot of reasons why it can make it very difficult to watch that video if you don't have those audio cues going along. So thank you for all your great insights and answers. Before we wrap up today, we're gonna go through, I warned you, so this is not a surprise to you, but let's go right into our speed round.
Let's do it.
Okay, our speed round for everyone who's new or just listening for the first time. These are meant to be fun, fast, quick answers from our guests. So, number one, speed round question, Justin. What is your favorite type of music?
I like loud drum kits and noisy guitars. And if somebody's screaming their head off, I'm all about it.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, that's always a lot of fun. Okay, so let me ask you this, and this might, I think I might be able to guess something, but what's the coolest audio-related project you were able to work on? I'm guessing there's some coolness about the projects that won the Grammys, but like, really for you, what's the coolest project you've ever been able to do?
Well, those Grammy projects really did teach me something because it was stuff I'd never done before. I was super into the kind of hard rock music, but that first Grammy was a Latin record, and the second one was a contemporary gospel record. So it introduced me to all kinds of people and players and styles and methods that I was not used to. And that was very, very rewarding and a total blast. Another session I had at Delivery Room was like a steel drums. We had a giant live room. I had like 40 people in that room, all just wailing on steel drums. And we set up a couple of mics in the room and caught everybody at the same time.
That sounds amazing. Sounds so super cool.
It was. They pulled up to the studio with a giant barbecue on a trailer and fed everybody that day.
So awesome. So awesome. Okay, next speed round question. So just a few more. What's the one piece of advice that you would give everybody today about better audio?
Trust your ears. Like, prepare, you know, give yourself a little trust, test runs. But ultimately, if you like what you hear, then other people probably will too. A lot of it comes down to preference, you know, and what sounds good to you. So trust what you're hearing.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great advice. And I think it works not only what you're hearing, but if you're making videos, what you're seeing as well. Trust that kind of initial gut. So, okay, two more questions. This one, you're a creative person. You obviously work with doing a lot of music, writing music, creating music. But outside of that, just kind of generally, where do you turn for inspiration?
I like visual arts a lot. I'm into photography and painting. So I'll actually look at those things. If I see an image that inspires something in me, I'll sit there and kind of imagine what it's like to be in that imaginary space. And if I daydream long enough, my brain will start making stories about it. And I do that and write pieces around that daydream that I had. You know, I'll write music around that. Inspiration, I read a lot. So like pick up an industry magazine or something. And in my case, in music, it would be Mix. But what I like about reading is that rather than watching a YouTube video, when you read something, you're hearing your own voice in your head giving you this information. And so it strips away a lot of the perhaps the bias or preferences the person in the video you're watching might have. They make a facial expression or they deliver with a certain inflection in their voice. And you're like, maybe I don't like that either. But if you're reading something, that's all kind of stripped away, and it's easier for me anyway to intuit what I really want out of it.
Awesome. Love that. Okay. Last question. And Justin, I'll just warn you, everyone usually says it's the hardest question. So last question of our speed round is what's a question you'd like to ask me?
Sorry. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. No one ever does.
That is a hard question. Matt, how did you get so darn charming?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I am, first of all. But, I really have a benefit of this is a dream job. I get to talk to a lot of people. And one of the things I've learned in doing this is that everybody has interesting things to say. And I love, you know, I think it's just for someone to be interesting, you have to be interested, right? And I just think I am so lucky to get to talk to people like yourself and all of our fantastic guests and hear the comments from our viewers. And I think, there's so many interesting stories out there. And at one point, I actually had started a podcast on my own outside of anything related to TechSmith called The Backstory Project. And the whole goal was I wanted to hear how people got from where they are, wherever they started, to where they are. Because I just love hearing those stories. I love hearing how people, you know, they have so much just interesting things that happen along the way that you might not think is interesting to yourself, but I just love hearing that stuff, and including your story and your how you've gotten from the music industry to TechSmith and, you know, the process along the way.
That's awesome. I got more out of that answer than I thought I was going to. That's killer. And you're touching on something that I hold very close to. You don't got to be right about everything. Other people have all kinds of stuff to teach you. So like, sit back and give them the opportunity to communicate what they know. And man, you'll learn all kinds of stuff from people.
Absolutely. Well, Justin, it has been a fantastic pleasure to be able to talk with you and learn from you today. If people are interested in finding you, connecting with you, just where should they go?
Yeah. I have social media that I sort of pay attention to. If you go to Justin David Pro, P-R-O, that's like the handle that I use. I have a website too, Byte Handle Studios, spelled B-Y-T-E, bytehandlestudios.com. And you can check my stuff out and contact me there as well.
Awesome. So who knows? Maybe we'll come across some of your music and some of the things that you've created. So Justin, thank you so much once again for joining us and sharing your wisdom. We're always grateful. And we know that you've got lots of our customers to help, and we're grateful for you being able to take some time out of your busy schedule here at TechSmith as well.
Super fun. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Later, everybody.
All right, everybody. Thank you to Justin again, once again. I keep clapping. Sorry about that. It's going to be in the noise and the audio. Got to learn my lessons. But we want to thank everybody for helping out. We want to take just a second here to thank behind the scenes that Jessie O'Donnell is always monitoring social media for us, and she's interacting with you all in the chat. making sure we get and see the questions and we're able to answer those for you. So thank you to her, and just give her a big thumbs up if you're in the chat today, or if you're listening to podcasts, drop us a line. Now, if you want to leave us any feedback, you want to suggest a guest, talk to us in any form, you can always email us at thevisuallounge@techsmith.com. You can also listen to the podcast later on any of the podcast platforms, Google and Spotify and Apple and Stitcher and who knows all the other names of the podcast platforms that are out there, but we are there. I can almost guarantee it. We're so grateful for everybody that tunes in and listens. Make sure you like, subscribe, do all those things. And if you learn something, don't forget to share it on social media. Before we wrap up, as always, we hope that you're learning these things along with us and that you're taking time out of your busy day to actually practice some things. So go practice what we learned about decibels and put it into place. And, if just you take a little time every day, you'll get a lot better. So take that time. Don't forget to level up. We'll see y'all next time.